Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Anyway, so only the Patreons see the video, unless we use clips for the internet.
Okay.
And then so for the Shift listeners, I already spoke to them last week on my solo episode saying that you would be coming on. This is Maria Wojciechowski.
Hello, Katie. How are you?
I already told them that you're the reason I started comedy.
Aw, that's so nice.
I remember being at Over the Eight, which is, yeah, now shut down. And it was so funny because I went with my friend, my Czechoslovakian friend. So I guess she's Czech, but she's also Czechoslovakian because I think it was Czechoslovakia
when she was born. Yes, because that was like in the 90s, I think.
Yeah. And then she moved to Ireland in her 20s and we became friends. And then she visited me when we were in America and she was like, oh, we should go to a comedy show. And she like organized the whole thing. And this is going to sound ignorant because I know for the Irish listeners, they're going to know there's like Maeve Higgins. There's Eleanor Tiernan. There was female comedians, but I never really watched comedy. So I only saw Dara Breen and Tommy Tiernan. And other than that, I never was into stand-up. It was never anything I would think I would do. And then we go and the men on the show are like bombing. They're like eating shit and they're like fine. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then you got on and you fucking crushed it and you were doing like a big performance and you were like so confident. And I was like, I want to be her. And you know what's so funny is that my comedy was never even like that either. Like as soon as I started, I could never.
Yeah.
Like I was never like a performer comedian, but it just took like now I definitely am a bit more like
I'm good on stage. I walk.
It took years. Okay.
I do remember like early on in your stand up when you were telling me, you were like, my goal is to get comfortable walking around on stage.
Everybody else is like, I want to be on TV. I'm like, I just want to be able to move with the microphone. I remember trying to do that and every step felt heavy. Like, yeah. And it's so funny because last night I was on stage and I was thinking about it right before I got on, like, because I just did another show and how comfortable I feel and like how it's such night and day. Like it took from being standing still to leaning on the back of the wall,
yeah,
to leg on the back of the wall, to like then going move here. I felt like somebody was controlling me with like a PlayStation control, you know, forward, back, forward, left, right.
My problem is I move around too much. And so it comes off as like nervous energy, I think.
Oh, I wouldn't have thought that. Watching you,
that's good to know.
Yeah, never. I would have been like, wow, she the stage is her bitch. That's a terrible saying,
but it's all coming from, it's 100% coming from like anxious energy, because it's like I have to get it out somewhere. Yeah. And if I stand really still, I get like very well, my material is kind of sad. It can be really sad.
So you're like talking about something like really dark, but you're like, I'm happy. Like, yeah. You're like, yeah, I know. I understand though. Sometimes you got to use the body like a, get them to trust you.
Yeah. Yeah. Because otherwise people are like, oh,
yeah.
And like, that's like the worst reaction for me is when people like sympathize or empathize, yeah, with me. I'm like, please just laugh. Like,
yeah. Oh no, don't make this more real. Yeah. No, I know. I feel like that because I'm working on a bit now that I tried to, when I started comedy, like all about like my family stuff, which can be quite,
yeah,
sad.
Yeah.
And I've always brought it back in and forth. And I was just thinking like the last few weeks, it's the first time I've really got it where they're consistently not like, like, oh, this is a little sad but also funny. It feels like, yeah, it's finally just funny.
Well, God. You also started controversially with family topics in the US with your dad killing your cat.
Yeah.
And in the US, we treat our pets like they're like
babies.
Yeah. And so, well, at least in New York.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you got your feet wet like very early on.
No, absolutely. They treat them like replacement kids. It is hard because it's such a different world as well, where it's like things that will be funny in Ireland just are way too, people here are like a lot more sensitive to it. And then in Ireland, I feel like you got to dig more into the dark stuff because they're like,
I noticed that like whenever I have like more like Northern European audiences, they're way more into my style of comedy than some American audiences. But then I also have some like too much, like too heavily American references. And they're like, this doesn't clock with me. So I'm like, okay, I don't know who I'm for. For transplants, I guess.
I think you should definitely go to Edinburgh. Edinburgh Fringe.
I would love to. Yeah. I wanted to. I applied, I think, or I was going to apply, and then the pandemic happened. Yeah. So I was going to apply with with the one woman, the solo show that I was talking about earlier with you. And then the pandemic happened and they canceled that year. So.
Okay, well, I think it's just back up this year. It's something to consider. Well, life, you know, it's hard to get out.
Yeah, I'm planning a wedding now.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. But still, I mean, and there's one woman shows around here. I mean, not one woman shows, really great spaces to do.
Yes, venues.
You know,
like
the St. Mark's Theater is great. And
that's what I did the show at the St. Mark's Theater in like 2013.
Yeah.
And that was like the perfect venue for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's, yeah, absolutely. I was just thinking in my head because I was like, if you were to go to Edinburgh Fringe and your references that you feel are American, I think you could totally look through your if you wrote it all down.
Yeah, I'll give it to you.
Yeah. Because you could even still do the American, because of globalization, I think people get a lot. But then you could be like, okay, this didn't work. And especially if you did the Fringe, because you're doing it every night, you could come back with like a UK based reference. Because you say Bob Hope, right?
Bob Dole.
Oh yeah, I don't know who the fuck that is.
Yeah, no,
that could be just a me thing.
No, it's not. He didn't even become president. He ran for president in the 90s.
Oh, you know what, even when you said that, the whole time I thought you were talking about an artist.
No.
Oh, that's Bob Ross when you talk about him.
Oh, Bob Ross is great.
Yeah, you have that. Yeah, so Bob Dole. So yeah,
no, my references are really they're very niche, even if you're American, and then they're like even more niche if you're not. So people are like, I think this is supposed to be, she was funny earlier, so we're just gonna laugh. We're gonna trust that this was funny.
Sometimes that happens for me too, where I'm like, you know, I think it's so true when they trust you and they get you, and you're like, I'm like, that's not gonna be funny again. That wouldn't be funny as a standalone. You're just going with it now.
It's like when you're charming somebody socially and they don't like totally get your joke, but they're like, well, I'm having fun. So I'm just gonna laugh.
Last night I did the joke backwards by accident. And so it didn't make sense, but they were having so much fun that they laughed anyway. And I thought on stage, well, I was very kind to them.
Yes.
I didn't even, because it, I can't, I must rewatch back the video, because I know I said the words completely backwards. So
yes.
It didn't make sense, but they just were like.
Like you flub your setup, so your punchline doesn't actually work, but people are like, we get where you were going with it.
Yeah, we're context clueing this. Yeah. This is fine. Okay, I wanted to have you on because. Well, firstly, you talk a lot about in your comedy about mental health.
I do, yeah.
And someone had wrote into the podcast that they had been diagnosed with a mental health issue, and they're based in Ireland. And a family member had said to them, like, "Oh, you know, don't tell people about that because of the stigma." And then secondly, "Oh, you won't be able to get a job or a mortgage." And I was like, wow.
Mortgage?
Yeah, I was like, that's wild. I need to get someone on to talk about that. There's still that stigma. But then I actually met with this Irish couple, and I was saying to them that we were going to do the podcast, and like, they're just in from Ireland. And I was like, there's still a stigma. And he was saying, the husband was like, there is, because he was like, when they went for their house, it was asked about your mental health, which I didn't think it ever would be.
Interesting.
And then jobs asked too for like health insurance and stuff. But I'm just like, that's wild to me, because I think that then you'd be afraid to get diagnosed, where it's like, if you're not looking after your mental health and you're not getting the help you need, it's going to be harder for you at work. It's going to be harder for you to like, like sort your life out.
Oh yeah. You're not able to like be a functional person if you're not getting treated. And it's the same with like, well, that's what really annoys me with the stigma, because it so many mental health issues can be treated really well now. And granted, there are a few that are really behind in the treatments. Like, I think schizophrenia has a long way to go with like a really quality treatment. That's some of the medicines that exist for that do work for people. Maybe if they have like milder, I say mild with quotes because I don't fully know like what the spectrum would be, but like there are certain ones that are more susceptible and can be treated, and there are types that are harder to treat. And so like there's this whole, you know, spectrum of different illnesses that maybe some medications work for and some don't. So we are behind in treatments. But that being said, I would say like a good 65 to 70% of mental health issues can be treated in some way to help people cope and like live fulfilling lives in some capacity. And it would be the same like if you're not treating a heart condition or something like that. Like if you're not treating your heart condition, then you can't function, you can't go to work, you're fatigued and all that stuff. And so it's crazy to me that it's even legal. I feel like in Ireland, then it's a legislative issue.
Yeah, because I feel like it's putting the presumption on them, like, oh, we need to know, because he was saying the insurance then would be higher for the mortgage if you have mental health issues, where I'm like,
oh, wow,
that's like, but that's, they should be like, oh, okay. And I need to know more details about it, but still it should be like, oh, you're getting medicated, you're less risk than me, because so I'm not diagnosed with anything. I could just, you know, someone who's going and getting the therapy they need and they're diagnosed and taking the medication, like I you know, I've been screened for anything, I'm more of a risk. Okay.
Yeah, I feel like, so my question is, and I would like to know this for my own curiosity and just like go march over there if it's true, but like, are they checking your like credit score and like it's showing up on your credit score, or is it just like verbal confirmation?
We don't have a credit score. He said that, so when he went for his mortgage, they have to get life insurance in case one of you die for so then the life insurance needs know. So but still, I do feel like it'll scare people. In general, that just scares, because then he said if you do have mental health, the premium is higher that you're paying.
Yeah.
Which is fucked.
That is. And it's, I do believe, and I don't know if they still have that here. There was that stigma here for a while with life insurance. But it was more, yes, it was mental health. But I believe the Obama administration, it was when they like passed laws to where you can't discriminate against pre-existing conditions.
Yeah, that's exactly, I feel like that's, it's discrimination.
Yeah, it is. So I feel like in this issue, really the stigma is being caused by the government. Yeah. And so you guys, if you're out there, go run for whatever your Senate is.
Go march.
I don't know what your parliament's like, but you know, your government, what is it called?
Yeah, and I think as well, and you're like, Katie, what's it called? I'm like, I don't fucking know.
Is there a prime minister? So, who's the king of Ireland?
The king of Ireland. Yeah, yeah. It's a Taoiseach. That's all I know. I don't vote there. I don't vote here.
The dolphin of Ireland. I'm like using French terms.
Everybody's like, we need to have our votes. And I'm like, some of us don't need to vote. Some of us, a lot.
I feel that way in the US too. Because in Australia, I know it's like required to vote. And I'm like, I don't know if I'd want that.
100%. Like, I think I'll vote for whatever my friends who are more intelligent tell me to vote for. Right now I can't vote, so it's grand, but I think I can vote in like local stuff, but like I always feel like I don't have enough information. I don't know. I'm just doing whatever my parents tell me, but my dad, let's say. But I think and I get nervous talking about this on the podcast because my family had tried to like cancel me off the podcast or whatever, the ones I don't talk to.
Yeah.
But I do think for me, it's my own personal reference with mental health. And when that person emailed me in, I thought, wow, I don't know with my mother, like she, sometimes as well, I think it's mean to people with mental health issues to just be like, oh, someone was a horrible person. Maybe they have mental health. And it's like, maybe she's just a horrible person. But I think with everything, and when I talk to people about it, I'm a therapist, they're like, oh no, it's definitely undiagnosed.
Yeah.
And I just imagine at the time, the people all probably saw, and they're probably like, oh, it's better to have her like this than have the stigma of mental health. And like, I just think if we were to go back in time, and I love the way my life worked out, so I don't want that. But I think for her, and if she had gotten the help that she needed, she might have still turned out to be a cunt.
But like a manageable cunt. Like, yeah.
I do. You know, when I could have kept at arm's length instead of continence length.
Exactly.
And I think for her too, it would have helped a lot with, you know, maybe just like understanding it, or like, because right now she's in a different realm or a different world of logic. And and the paranoia and the angry and the mood swings and everything. And I think they'd rather her being like that than, and I think that's really important for anyone to listen to. Oh, you think that if you just don't get it diagnosed, no, because your life is way worse if you're not getting the help that you need.
It also, I mean, it's not on mentally ill people to like destigmatize it. I do understand that, because that's a lot of pressure already.
Absolutely.
But getting the help you need and being like a representative in a positive way is like a great start to destigmatizing it, and then and being vocal about it. And like I said, I mean, it sounds like in Ireland it's a legislative issue, so if more people actually, I mean, so many people are mentally ill, and then like I don't know. See, I always have a theory. I'm like, is the U.S. more mentally ill because you kind of had to be mentally ill to like get on a boat and come here? Like when I think about like the European immigrants that came over here, I'm like, that sounds awful. Like my ancestors, like, they could have just died from diarrhea on a boat for no reason. I'm like, that's mental illness right there. So yeah. I'm curious, like, is it just genetic here more because some of the immigrants that came over just were crazy, or, you know, I don't know.
I think that there's definitely high in Ireland and it's just undiagnosed.
Yeah.
Or,
I mean, I've read a lot of Irish literature. There's definitely depression over there.
100%.
There's generational trauma for sure.
Sad people. And like an inability to express your emotions, and you don't know the words for those emotions is very frustrating. Like, I have to say, being in therapy and being in America has helped a lot with a lot of that stuff for me. So even though we would, you know, you would say, oh, America has more mentally ill people, I don't know, because I think it's more just more people are open about it.
Yeah.
And I think if I hadn't have come here, I wouldn't have dealt with a lot of my, like a lot of the things, because in Ireland, it's like you're grand. Oh, don't worry about it. Oh, that's not a big deal. Everybody's, and the culture in Ireland is someone has it worse. Oh, you're so lucky that you only have night terrors every night, or you're so lucky that, well, you don't speak to your mother, at least you speak to your father, or, you know, well, he left when you were five, he could have left when you were two. Yeah, I mean, it's always like, and it's like, oh, there's starving kids in Africa, that's the fucking biggest one. And then they have like a troker box on the table that you donate money to, and there's like literally a starving child with a fly on his head. So it's always like, it's always a reference when you're growing, well, you could be that child.
Oh my, I cannot stand like the trauma, like the one down that happens with mental health. And that's actually, you know, one of my jokes is just about how we're like, you have depression, okay, how many milligrams of Zoloft are you on? You're a poser. Like, like we are. And it happens here too, of like people really just trying to like be the one who's more messed up, I guess.
So whereas in Ireland it's trying to be like, oh no, I've nothing, I'm fine. It could be way worse, your arm's falling off. Like, no, I could be missing a leg as well. So it's like people do what you're saying, they put that on people, but then people also do the opposite, put them on themselves. Or like, oh no.
Yeah, I do feel like I mean, it's in one way that's like a great coping mechanism, because it does keep you going, but then it does hinder you from realizing that you need help.
Oh, I totally agree. I think for me, what was really good was my stepmom's a social care worker, so she's very clued in with a lot of stuff in mental health.
Yeah.
And her being like, I think, I can't remember, but one time I was upset about something and I said something like, oh, well, it could be worse. And she was like, yeah, but that doesn't make your problem not a bad problem. Like,
right,
it's still, you're still dealing with it, and just because it could be worse doesn't mean
what's happening to you is okay.
Yeah. So it was really like enlightening, because mm-hmm. you're like, yeah, it's, and I think once you admit something's shit and you go and you deal with it, everything's better in the long run.
Like, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I had the same thing when, so I was diagnosed with, so,
oh yeah,
everyone, we'll say what I have. So I have bipolar 1 with psychotic features. And so I was diagnosed in the middle of a psychotic episode, and it was really difficult to get anyone to believe me that I was like hallucinating, because everyone thought I was being quirky or goofy, and nobody really took me seriously because I was like a cute 25-year-old girl. And so everyone was like, oh, Marie. And this was at the time of like Zooey Deschanel, where it was like cute to be like very bizarre. Yeah. And so people just really just ignored me when I would say things that were off the wall. And I was having conversations with people that didn't make sense at all because I was misinterpreting what they were saying to me. I was having like auditory hallucinations where they would be talking to me and maybe they were saying like, oh, hey, how's your day? But what I was hearing was like, oh, you look horrible today. Yeah. And so I would reply back to you look horrible today. And I'd be like, why are you saying that? That's so mean. And to them, they would think I was joking because what they had said was, how is your day?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, why are you saying that? That's so mean. And so they're like, ha ha ha, you're so funny, Maria. Yeah. Like, what a goof.
Oh my God.
And when I would try to tell people, like, I think I might be losing my mind, everyone was just like, no, you're just, you know, artistic or you're just whatever. And it wasn't until, because after the psychotic, the main part of the psychotic break, I fell into a really bad depression. And I was really hung up on an ex-boyfriend that I didn't even like.
Yeah.
And I was like, I just had a moment when I was talking to my friend about him. And she was like, Maria, you never liked him. What's going on, really? And that was like the light bulb for me. I was like, I need help. I need start to see somebody and get diagnosed and figure this out. And so then I was seeing a therapist at the time. And she had tried to diagnose me with bipolar, like session one. And I grew up talking about stigma. I grew up with a mom who would always call me bipolar, but as an insult.
Yeah.
And so I always took it as an insult to like my personality and my being, as opposed to just like an illness that you can treat and you can still be your great bubbly self, or you can be sad sometimes, like just in a letterbox of like not feeling the extreme emotions.
Yeah.
But so I was scared to accept the diagnosis up until I had that psychotic break. And I was just I did reach my breaking point mentally of just like, I really can't live like this. And I was so depressed. I had to have friends come spend the night with me because I was worried I was going to hurt myself. And yeah. So I went and got diagnosed, and then I started medication. And I'm one of the lucky people because my medication worked right away.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't happen for everybody, and I don't think it happens for most people, but I'm telling you, I didn't realize I was seeing the world through such a dark lens. Literally everything was like almost black and white for me, and it was like somebody just suddenly turned on a color TV, and I was like, what, the flowers look beautiful, everything looks stunning. And it was incredible. And then once I leveled out a little bit, I like that then was still cycling through some emotions. But like I said, really what it did for me was like my extremes were at, you know, 200. Whereas then when I was on medication, it brought me down to like 100 or 80, or, you know, it was my levels were, I don't know how to describe it, but I still felt all of my emotions. I was still creative. I was still everything I was before. Just like the extreme versions of it were more muted. And so I was able to function and deal with my emotions in a healthy way.
Yeah.
So it was, yeah, I mean, it was the best thing that ever happened to me, was to confront it and like to let go of the stigma. And for me, what really helped me was there was a band that I really liked at the time called Passion Pit, and their lead singer was pretty vocal about having bipolar.
Oh, I love Passion
Pit. Yeah. I like really related to that one album that was like in 2012. I can't even remember what it was called, but I really felt just connected to the music. And when I found out what the album was written about, I was like, no wonder I'm connecting to this. I'm living the same thing. And it gave me, I don't know, it just made me feel like, okay, this person's successful. I don't know how, if he's doing well, I don't know him, but like they were doing well, at least professionally. And it gave me that like courage, and it destigmatized it for me. And that was when I knew right away that I couldn't live with it quietly because it would make me feel like I was crazy. Whereas if I just lived with it like with an open heart, then it was like me saying like, I'm not. This is just an illness I have. And it has never like been a problem dating. Even when I've dated guys who are quote unquote normal, like, you know, you're an artist, but like, yeah. So most of the guys I've dated are like artistic and, you know, they probably have something going on too. But like, I dated a few like finance bros or whatever. And for them, it was like, oh, if she's just so open about it and she's dealing with it, then she's fine. Yeah. And that was the truth of it too. So it was nice.
I think as well, like what you said were, earlier with the heart attack thing, like if someone had cancer, no one would like shame them or make them feel bad about it or
for going like, to chemo. Yeah
I'm not like, oh, you're being such a cancer head, you know. When someone's annoying, like, and it is true, people use bipolar as like a, and they don't even, when people use bipolar as a insult, they just don't even really know what it means.
Yeah,
I think, and I think that's why 100% so many people are afraid, because it has had such a negative connotation.
Yeah.
It's like when people use other words, when we look at the words, a lot of time you don't even know what it means. You're just throwing out something, you know, that's an insult.
Yeah. And my grandmother had schizophrenia, and so she had schizophrenia in Alabama in the 1960s. So there was no mental health awareness at the time. There were like the hospitals were asylums. Like, it was a really messed up situation for her. And I feel for her so much, because I just think about like what could she have been like had she gotten diagnosed in 2022. Yeah. And like been able to get in, like I had said earlier, you know, schizophrenic medications are not at the level yet that I would hope they would be, but they are way more advanced, because I think at the time all they had was like lithium, and they just used that to treat everything. So, and electroshock therapy, which doesn't work for schizophrenia, but it can be good for depression. So there's like, they just used a one size fits all for any mental illness at the time. And I like, my heart breaks for like what her life was. Yeah. When it was totally out of her control, given, medicine at the time. And so that's one of the reasons why I feel so strongly about people getting help, because like, we live in a time when it's, you know, one of the first times in history where people can get the help they need. Again, not everybody can, but a majority can, and they can get the help they need and live a quality life. Yeah.
And I think if more people, like, if you think about it, like, I feel like it's always easier to advocate for others than yourself. Mm-hmm. So if you're like, the more people are getting diagnosed, the more they're going to put research into this. And that article I was reading the other day about for this was saying that there needs to be more research into mental health. There needs to be more people wanting it. And I think I'm with you. I think more people, because in comedy, more of my friends are diagnosed with something than the people who aren't. So to me, that's just like, oh, well, they're the people who went and got the help that they needed. More people need to get help. I think it's way more common than we all talk about or know about.
Absolutely. And I do feel like, weirdly enough, with younger generations, when people are in their 20s, there tend to be, at least in the US, like a trendy illness. Have you noticed that by any chance? I feel like right now ADHD is trending.
Oh, yeah.
And when I was in my 20s, it was bipolar, and I think that weirdly helped me, because it made me be like, oh, I have bipolar. And then some of my friends who had it, you know, they don't. But at the same time, it was like, you know what? I hated it at the time that everyone was calling themselves that, because it really made me feel like, no, you don't know what it's actually like. Yeah. But by the same token, it destigmatized it in a way. So with people thinking they had it when they actually didn't, or they just had maybe depression or something else that was living in that world. It ended up being, even though the pendulum swung a little too far to that direction, it did level out eventually. And so that's why I'm like, okay, I don't know, maybe it'll happen with every generation. A new one is more acceptable or something.
Yeah. No. There was something I was going to say there when you said about the ADHD. Because it's like, and they've even changed the name of it.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, because Emma Willman had a bit about it, but where it's like, it's Oh, because it used to be ADD and now it's ADHD. Oh, yes. That's it. Yeah. And she has a really funny bit where her sister's like, it's actually ADHD now. And she's like, you know, I'm dyslexic.
That's hysterical.
Yeah. I think, so a question I want to ask you is, when you feel like something as a person, you're feeling like, you know, something's off, something, do you go to a psychiatrist or a therapist?
I do both. So I see a therapist once a week and a psychiatrist once a month.
But the very first time you went to a therapist?
Right? Yeah, the very first time. So I started therapy because I was, I actually started therapy because I have this strong fear of getting colon cancer. It's just like always been in the back of my mind. And my grandfather died of that. So I think it was just always something like, and, you know, we both have IBS. So I've always had stomach issues. And I was convinced that I had colon cancer. And I was like very stressed out about what was going on with my stomach and my body because my digestive system was just a huge mess. Mm-hmm. And so my primary care doctor at the time ran a bunch of tests on me and everything was coming back normal. And then she sat me down, and I love that she did this because she checked me physically and really did her due diligence, like making sure I was healthy before she then was like, are you anxious? Because I hate when doctors do that. Because
then you don't feel like gaslit.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Because there have been times when I was gaslit too, because of not bipolar, but just the doctors do that sometimes to women. But she sat me down afterwards and was like, so everything is honestly looking normal. And the next thing I would like to check into is like if you're feeling anxious or depressed. And I just started to cry immediately. And it was like I didn't even know that I was feeling anxious and depressed until she asked me, and I just burst into tears. And so then she recommended me to just a talk therapist. Yeah. And I didn't. That was when, you know, I was just going in there and talking about my feelings. And that's when, through my talk therapist, I started to discover that there was something deeper going on that needed medication. Yeah.
I think that's important for the listeners as well. They're not going to like straight away say, they're going to talk through and find out. And like, because even my therapist is like, let's talk about your diet sometimes. Like they're going to go through everything first before.
Exactly.
Yeah. What is the worst thing? Because I was reading in this article and they were saying things not to say to someone who has mental health issues. What is the worst things that people can say?
Oh, there's a million worst things. I think one of them is when people do diminish how you're feeling.
Yeah.
So like you were saying, where your arm's falling off and someone's like, well, at least it's not your leg. It's that same feeling of like people just saying like, well, you're fine. You have money, or you're fine because you're pretty, or, you know, really it makes you feel like, oh, well, it makes you feel worse, especially if you're in a depressive state, because then you're like, oh, I have all of these things going for me and yet I'm unhappy. So therefore I will never be happy. When the truth is you're unhappy because your brain is broken, and that's not your fault. And nothing in your life is going to make your brain not broken. So you need to, what you need is medication, or, you know, maybe you do need just like a very good therapist, depending on what your diagnosis is. So that to me is like one of the biggest, one of the worst things to say. A better thing really to say, like if somebody is complaining about stuff to you, is just listen.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is like, if they're not in therapy, you know, the person, some people take it.
Yeah.
I have a lot of people in my life that desperately need therapy and I've been trying to get them there and I can't even suggest it because they lose their minds like if I suggest it.
And I think it's because, again, they feel like there's such a bad connotation with the word crazy.
Yes.
When you say you should go to therapy, they're like, oh my god, you think I'm crazy?
Yes.
So like I'll say it to people all the time, but I'll be like, I'm in therapy, it really helped me. Like, I really think, if you know, they'll be like, oh, it's too much money, and I'm like, I thought the same too, but this Valera Health is $15 a session, so you can find a way around it. And like,
yeah, I think that's the exact way to go about it if you are in therapy, or if you've been in therapy before, is just like putting it on you and saying like, I once felt a certain way, and when I started therapy and I got this and that, and helping that person find the resources, because if you're in the middle of a depressive episode everything feels like a mountain to you. So it's so hard to do anything. Like, it's hard to get dressed. It's hard to take a shower. So it's especially hard to make an appointment. So if it's someone you're close with and you feel close enough to, you can offer to help make that appointment with them if they seem interested.
And yeah, and to offer to go with them. And if you haven't been in therapy, you can literally use this episode of the podcast. You can say, hey, I haven't, you know, but if I ever needed it, I would 100%. And I heard these two great girls.
Super hot.
Yeah, talking about it. And, you know, it seems to have changed their lives. I think another thing, you know, I was thinking about when you were in school and how they were like, oh, Maria's just quirky. And it's like, if you were vomiting, they would be like, oh, Maria's sick.
Yeah.
And I think I remember when I was depressed and it was coming out of the mother situation. And I just because people don't understand about depression and they don't understand about mental health, they don't want to deal with it and they just want you to be better, but they don't know how to fix you and they get frustrated and they're like, oh, just like get on with it.
Yes.
And that's so frustrating.
Just cheer up.
Yeah. And it's like, whereas if I were physically, when you're like, if I had a flu, they'd be like, oh, rest up there now. Let me make you a cup of tea. Let me know what I can do for you. Let me drive you to the doctor. And it's like, why don't they take that attitude when someone's depressed? Like, okay, well, let me know what you need, I'm here for you, instead of like getting frustrated. It's so hard because then you feel like, okay, now I gotta pretend like I'm okay when I'm not. And
right,
it doesn't help at all. You're not getting the help you need.
Well, it's exhausting to pretend like you're okay as well. Like, it, and so if anyone's listening who is, you know, struggling and pretending every day, like the problem with pretending is that it fatigues you. So you're not able to, then when you get home in the quiet of your house, you're not able to like have that strength to cope the same way. If you were a little more honest with yourself throughout the whole day, you're saving your energy for when you really need it, which is honestly when you're alone at night, I think.
Yeah.
I think that the other bad thing that people say to me, and this is what people say now that I'm like way more open about bipolar, is I will get DMs all the time from people being like, I think that my brother has bipolar. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, like what's going on? And they're like, he burnt down our house and murdered my family. And I'm like, I think something else also is going on.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing too. It's like, people don't know that there's all these different, like you said, you're bipolar with psychosis features.
Yeah.
So there's like all these different, and then also it could be just someone who just burnt down a house, is an angry person.
He's got arson.
Yeah, maybe it could be just, you know, maybe he just likes to burn down houses.
I don't know. he's bipolar and an arsonist. Like,
yeah.
You can be multiple things, you know? It's sometimes I get really annoyed with, I do get annoyed when people excuse bad behavior based off of just mental illness.
Yeah.
Because we are never just one thing. You know, you're not just Irish and you're not just a woman and you're not just whatever. We're all multiple things and that's what makes us who we are.
Yeah.
And so when I am not just a bipolar person, everything I do in my life is not a result of being bipolar. So when people kind of just justify bad behavior because of a mental illness, I think I get a little frustrated because I'm like, there are multiple factors that brought that into it. And maybe bipolar is what gave them that like bad part of the brain that made them follow through with it. But there was something that made them do it. Like,
yeah,
there's other things going on as well.
I agree with you too, because a lot of me not feeling guilt about not speaking to my mother as well. A, I put in 18 years, and B, it's still not an excuse for everything that went down. I do think even if she did take tablets, she might have, you know,
what we were saying. She would just been a manageable cut.
Yeah. I still think there's no, and it's, it gets to a point where it's not my responsibility anymore, so I do think like, and sometimes people will be like, oh, but maybe she's mentally unwell. And I'm like, yeah, but that doesn't mean I needed to be traumatized.
Is a line that people have to draw when there are people who are refusing treatment in their lives. And because I do think there's a difference between somebody who's struggling with treatment, but you know that they're trying, and then somebody who's refusing to do anything about it. Yeah. And the person who's refusing to do anything about it, they are going to be causing mental health problems in you if you continue to let them abuse you or there's just a lot of things that happen. I mean, mental health is so delicate and everyone's susceptible in some way. Uh-huh. Because, you know, PTSD and stuff like that, that's a mental health illness, but that's not particularly a genetic one all the time. It's triggered by something environmental that happens to you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a really tough one. It's a really tough line to cross of like knowing what your boundary is as a person, because you want to be empathetic to others, but you also have to take care of yourself.
100%. I totally agree with that. It can cause mental health issues in you. And I also think as well, if the person is refusing to get treatment, and you guys have done everything, it's like sometimes you have to give space and let that person maybe...
Yeah, or hit their own rock bottom.
Yeah, figure that out on their own. Yeah. And maybe then hopefully they'll choose, or hopefully they'll not. But I definitely had PTSD, because up until going to therapy, I had nightmares, like night terrors every night, sleep paralysis. Sometimes in the shower or like walking down the street, I would hear my mother scream my name.
Oh, God.
Like, and it would just be like a loud, like a car screech or something in the shower.
Yeah.
So like little things like that. And it definitely affected me. And like when people would do things, it would trigger... like, and I would feel defensive, but I'd be like, why am I so defensive because they said that?
Yeah.
Or why do I feel the need to prove this? Or why do I feel like I'm walking on eggshells with certain things? And it was just like, oh, when I went to therapy, it was like, oh, very basic. I felt very like, ah, I'm just a fucking...
It's my childhood.
Freudian case. I'm not that complicated at all. But, and all the through the talk therapy, I don't have the nightmares anymore. I haven't heard a screech. Last time I went to Ireland, because I used to feel like very panicky going back to Ireland.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that.
Yeah, and I didn't feel like that at all. And I think just being like, yeah, that was shit. This is terrible. Let's talk about it. And talked about things that I didn't even know I was annoyed about, you know, like mm-hmm. in the situation, you know, and really got to vent that out and feel not guilty about it, because it's not, I'm not venting to the people. I'm not venting, you know, it's like, yeah, I think, and on that PTSD is because of someone else who isn't dealing with their shit.
Yeah, I really feel like I wish that everyone went to therapy for like a year of their lives. I wish it was just like mandated universally,
like the Israeli army. Yes, for therapy.
Exactly. I mean, I know that there are some therapists that can be unintentionally, I guess, like promoting bad behavior. And, you know, therapy is what you get out of it. You have to be super honest, because if you're not, then you're not going to get anything out of it, because your therapist won't actually be helping you.
Oh, that's so true. That's another thing true. And I said and I said this in the solo episode, you have to be open to say all the stuff, because it might feel hurtful when they say like, actually, like, you know, that's, you might feel like they're implying something you did is wrong, but it actually helps to find out where that's coming from.
Yeah.
And most of the time, actually, they don't. Sometimes you're just so paranoid that they're like, they don't even say that you're wrong. They're just like, okay, well, let's like figure out where
that came from. Yeah. Like why you wanted to do that.
Yeah. And they're so nice. They're like, well, that makes sense, of course, because you're coming from it from this perspective. And then you're able to go back to your partner and be like, oh, so sorry, I slammed the door. But I actually, it was because of that time my mother.
When I was 5 years old, you start doing a solo show. Lights dim and there's a spotlight on you. And then she was yelling and I was in my bathroom.
Yeah. No, it's, and then in fairness to them, when you give them that information, if they're a good partner, they know this is a trigger.
Yeah.
In fairness to them, whenever I've told anything to Leland that I'm like, oh, that kind of makes me feel like this because of such and such. And I'm able to go now, not like, you're a fucking asshole because of this. I'm able to go, oh, I know that maybe you didn't mean it this way, but this is how I hear it because of my past. And he's able to go, fuck, okay, that's, you know, I definitely won't say that. Because there's different words that people mean as a joke.
Yes.
Like my interpretation of jealousy is so different than his interpretation of jealousy. And I remember one time he was like, oh, you're jealous because this. And I've worked my whole life to never even show jealousy.
Because
my mother was like the most jealous, like where it's like a just jealousy disorder. And so I was like, you know, and I freaked, and he was like, no, like I didn't mean it like that. Jealousy to me just means like you were like, oh, like,
yeah, slightly like, envious.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. I interpreted that as this is, and you know, we all have different definition of words because of our experiences.
Yeah.
It's what, can I ask you?
Yeah.
So the different types of, what time do you have to leave at?
I'm good.
Okay, great.
I'm having a great time.
Okay, yay! Me too. So what here's the thing too. people have, so I think it's really important for everybody to know we make our own definition of words. So if I were to say to my dad, let's say, oh, I've been diagnosed with bipolar, I think he thinks my mother has that, even though we haven't been, no one's diagnosed
her.
Yeah. So he might be like, but no, that's not that. Mm-hmm. And like, this is a hypothetical conversation. This is, but my point is, you say you've bipolar one.
Right.
So what is that?
Oh, there's two types.
Okay.
So there's bipolar one, which means that you can have manic episodes. And so a manic episode is racing thoughts, ideas of like grandeur. So you can think like, oh, I'm the queen of the United States. You're like, that doesn't exist.
For a second, I was like, well, I think I'm really good at comedy. I'm so Irish that I was like, is that grandeur?
No, I knew I had it when I was like, I am a good comedian.
Yeah, that was the queen of America. Yeah.
You really get these like just thoughts in your head that you're really great at a lot of things. Another thing is that you can't finish tasks. So you just you're having all of these like sometimes very creative, cool ideas, but you're not able to follow through on absolutely anything because you're having so many ideas at once that you can't shuffle out the noise, and you do become incapacitated by the mania, and you're not able to actually like get anything done. And you talk really fast, and you don't have to have all of those things going on. But the other big sign is that it lasts for more than 4 days. So it'll last. For me, it lasted, I've only had one actually manic episode, and all of the others have been what's called hypomanic, which is like the thing that it's like a euphoric state that does cause some people with bipolar not to get medicated, because you are like really creative for 4 days and your racing thoughts aren't as bad. You're actually able to get things done. Like I wrote a play one time in 4 days and it's like, actually not bad, you know. Like one of those things. But the manic episodes are so terrible that you're truly not able to like accomplish anything. And that's one of the states that gets a lot of people like locked up, you know, because they have no impulse control at that stage. Okay. And so there's just a lot of things that happen. And so anywho, a manic episode is, so if you have one manic episode, you're technically diagnosed with bipolar one. Okay. Because bipolar two on the other spectrum leans more towards depression. Yeah. And you can have depression with bipolar one, which I definitely do. I definitely get a lot of depressive episodes. But with bipolar two, you mostly don't get manic episodes. You're usually you usually go more towards the depression side, and then sometimes hypomanic. But the tricky thing about bipolar 2 is that sometimes people are misdiagnosed with regular depression. Okay. And this is how we know that it's a physical illness, because if you treat someone with bipolar 2 with antidepressants, what's going to do is their body is going to take that serotonin and have a hypomanic episode. Oh. So they're not going to be able to stabilize on antidepressants. And usually if someone's like not responding to antidepressants, it's usually because they actually have bipolar. But there are plenty of people who have bipolar that just show depression. Yeah. As their state. It's a complicated illness. It is linked to schizophrenic genes. And so I do think like it, and like you, to your point before, it's not as highly researched and understood scientifically as it should be. So we understand it way more in theory than we do in like medical practice. Yeah. And so it is important for people to get diagnosed, because the more people who have it, the more likely there's going to be money that's put into research.
And the quicker you get diagnosed, the quicker you can try out the different medications.
Yes. Yeah. Because a lot of times you have to do a cocktail of medications. Like I'm on more than one medication. Yeah. So you take more than one thing, but you have to find the right dose, and you have to find, you know, what works for you, and not everything's going to work for you right away. Or it's a complicated process sometimes. So like I have insomnia on top of bipolar And I also have anxiety. So I have to like treat all of those things like in a holistic type of way, you know, to make
like
sure.
Like a mixologist. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Just to make sure, like, because my insomnia 100% triggers the anxiety and bipolar episodes, where and my anxiety will feed into my insomnia. So there's just a lot. It's all coexisting within each other. So it's really important to like figure out what is going on. And you, like I said before, you may not just be one thing. Like, and that's why you shouldn't ever qualify someone as a bipolar or like a schizophrenic, because people aren't just that. Like there are different levels to everybody. And so it's, and that like adds to the stigma that like you are your illness.
Yeah. I think it's so interesting because when you're saying all this, like, okay, so you have to do this for this part of your brain and this for this part of your brain. It's the exact same as someone wanting to work out to be at a certain weight, or someone who is like more likely to maybe be overweight but is worried about like conditions that they have something in their body that shows, oh, you've high cholesterol, so you're going to have to like work out extra or do these workouts. Like,
right.
I know for me, let's say I'm malnutrition, so I have to take extra vitamins than your regular person. I don't need to work out like regular people because I have a high metabolism and it's just genetic. But it'd be better to work out for my energy. But I have rosacea, so I can't do too sweaty working out. So it's like, hey, you figure this out as you go along. And that's the exact same as your brain stuff. Okay, so I have high anxiety, but I get depression. So let's work through what tablets. It's the same as me taking multivitamins. I'm on IPMS. So I'm on Primrose. I'm on multivitamin for the malnutrition. I'm on vitamin D because I don't really like going out in the daytime. And I have allergy, multivitamin medicine and allergy medicine. So like, it's not that I'm on five cocktails where it's like,
yeah,
for someone else, like if you feel bad about having to take a like, it's not that different.
Yeah.
You know, you go for a run to be at a certain weight.
Right. Yeah. And I think there's also, I mean, I don't know how it is in Ireland, but in the US there's a big pharma fear that a lot of people have, like where they're afraid of the pharmaceutical companies and don't trust them. But I would say to that, like, you can do some sincere research because a lot of these medications have been out there for a long enough time to where you can check to see what your doctor's putting you on and making sure for your own sanity, literally, that you know that this drug is working for other people and safe for you to take. There are also sometimes, I mean, bipolar, I think I truly believe bipolar has to be medicated, but there are like some levels of depression that maybe doesn't need to be medicated by a pharmaceutical but can be medicated by yoga and talk therapy and things that are like really good for you. Healthy diet, no drinking, stuff like that.
It definitely worked for me because I would say, you know, it's so funny when I look back now, there was times where I would just, and this is like over years, so back and forth, where I'd be like so depressed that I would like fantasize about suicide, but I'd know I'd never do it.
Yeah.
But it's like, you don't want to be fantasizing about it. You don't want to be like fucking getting wet over the knife in the corner. You know? And it's like, I never would, but I just would feel so low. And I'm even when I started dating Leland, there was times where I was just like, look, I'm just in a funk and I need it. And ever since therapy, and I feel so good now that I don't really have anything to talk about in therapy, but I'm like nervous to lose it.
Yeah.
But I'm sure like I can stop and go back if worse comes to worse. But I just think like getting everything out in the open was, it really helped. And learning about like triggers and learning about like, oh, you know, just go outside and such a basic thing. But like if you're feeling low, just going outside and going for a walk, or knowing I worked two day jobs while doing stand up every night, and a lot of that, if I'm honest, was to like make my father feel proud, which is like bullshit because in the end it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
like when am I gonna be exhausted, and he's just like, oh great, you're exhausted. But that's just because he overworks himself. So, and I think he sees that a lot as his like identity. So a lot of me was always like trying to prove myself, but it's also like in the end, who the fuck are you? I can't work as hard as that man. That man's like, I don't know, like bionic or whatever, is that the word? Like the robotic man.
Yeah, I think that bionic is the right word.
Yeah, so just not being hard on yourself, being nice to yourself and being like, yeah, I don't, and I'm so much happier now that I don't work. I like work one day at a bar, do the comedy, and it's like, yeah, I don't need to have four different careers to feel like you're just running away from your problems too.
Yes. Yep. Gosh, that made me lose. I lost my train of thought. There's something you said made me think of something. I
overworking. Oh, going for a walk.
Yes.
Such oh, a I, basic.
The,
right.
That made me think about the fact that I do believe like when you were talking about like your issues with your mom, I had issues with my mom. I truly believe that if you want to be a parent one day, you really should deal with your problems in therapy yeah. before you have kids, because even if your problems aren't that bad, or you know, you're not dealing with an actual depression episode, like you're gonna unknowingly pass on anxieties you have to your kids, or different things you have. Your kids are gonna pick up on those things, yeah. and like so, you really want to be the best version of yourself before having kids. And also, I think for women especially, if you want to be able to know, like. Because postpartum depression is really, really common to get. And it happens in women who've never experienced depression before. And so I feel like it would be really helpful to people to like know, okay, what does depression, like what should I be on the lookout for yeah. in talking to a professional about those things, and maybe even seeing a therapist like throughout your pregnancy and stuff like that, just to make sure like, are these things I'm feeling because of the environment, or is it because I'm sinking into a postpartum depression? Like what's just having someone to bounce that off with, like a professional.
I think that's a great idea.
I remember us talking though, like 4 years ago or something, about therapy. And I remember saying like, I really worry that I'm going to accidentally like fuck up my kids because of, things that my mom did, or you know, even my dad did, not knowing that they did it. And now I'm less worried about it because it's like I've already kind of hashed out all that.
Like I completely agree with you. It was one of my fears with having a kid was A, that it would be, if there was like a genetic thing, that it would turn out like my mother and I can't just abandon my kid. Or B, that I would have all this unresolved issues. But I'm the same as you now. I've worked it all out. And I think it's so true, everything you're saying, because these are learned behaviors when it comes to like gaslighting, manipulation. And it's really important, if you notice that you're doing that, to like figure it out and learn how to communicate without having to, yeah, gaslight someone or manipulate someone.
Yeah.
And we've all done situations, like I've been in situations where a friend has, I'm trying to think, you know, been like, oh, I can't think of a good thing where you by accidentally gaslight them, where you're like, no, I wasn't annoyed. And then you're like, you know, now that I'm like older, you know, like I just look back, because I've done a lot of looking inward, and like when I'm a teen or something, and it's like, oh, it's just so much easier to be like, yeah, I was, no, you weren't imagining that. I
manipulated people unknowingly all the time.
Yeah.
And it was like not even realizing that was what it was, because I didn't know the name for it. And I knew what manipulation was, but I always thought of manipulation as like malice intent, like you needed to mean that you were trying to manipulate somebody, and not realizing that like, oh, I was trying to get this behavior out of them.
Yeah.
And so I did that thing in order to like get that response from them.
Yeah, like saying like you're in a relationship and you're pissed off, so you're looking for a fight, and yeah. then you say the one thing, you know, your partner will be really pissed off about, and then you're like, I didn't mean it like that, you're taking it like that. Like, I mean, like we've all been guilty at some, but the key is to just be like, okay, I don't want to do that again, or that's not, get yeah. your drama somewhere else, do a sport, yeah. watch telenovela,
take an acting class.
Yeah. But yeah, do comedy.
There's plenty of drama and comedy.
So much adrenaline though, that you're just, yeah, there's so much that you're like, ah, this is enough. I don't need this. But yeah. So like with parents too, like you'll see them be passive aggressive towards each other because they're not trying to show that they fight in front of the kid. But the kids pick up on that.
Oh yeah.
And then they feel, yeah, I think you're right. You definitely go to therapy if you're a parent. 100%.
Yeah. Before you want to be.
Yeah, figure out your shit. Figure out your fucking shit.
Yeah.
Because like it's funny. Oh, and that's the thing too. Like as any kid who's grown up in sort of a weird environment, you go on thinking that's normal. And that's why women date men who are abusive.
Yes.
Because they've seen it, their father abusing their mother. Like I was so numb to a lot of stuff. Like one time my mother when I was really small, I don't know what I did to annoy her, but she was like, okay, I'm just gonna, she was like crying at the table. She was definitely in like, I would say it's a manic episode.
Yeah.
Because it was very manic, like just to be straight away crying. And then she was like, I'm just gonna slip my wrists at the table and the blood is gonna pour out and you're gonna, you know, you're gonna regret whatever I said. And I was a kid, I didn't say anything that bad. I'm sure I just said like, I prefer pizza for dinner or something.
Mm-hmm.
But that was normal. And then you grow up and you realize it's not normal and you have to deal with that. But like, yeah, so it's like kids will think that this is all normal. And then you go to someone else's for dinner. You go to a friend's for dinner and they're just like praying at the table or like, oh, you know, telling each other they love each other. And I'm like, you don't say you're going to slit your wrists at the table. That's not normal.
Yeah, I know. I feel like I didn't realize certain things until I was in like, I was in healthy relationships that bored me.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize like, oh, I was, because I was searching for what was comfortable for my life, and what was comfortable for my life was chaos and people yelling at each other all the time. Like, I think my family is very much not Irish and they will say everything they feel, but to a point that's like, some things you gotta keep to yourself. Like, yeah. Like I remember one Christmas, my dad got my mom some Tupperware and my mom like flipped out on him in front of everybody and she started throwing the Tupperware everywhere. Yeah. And then she left and she didn't spend Christmas with us. And I grew up thinking that, and that wasn't, you know, the first outburst like that. And I grew up thinking it's normal to have these huge emotional outbursts when you don't get your way.
Yeah.
And in relationships like that, that was the reason why, one of the reasons why I could never have a healthy relationship, because the guys who were healthy didn't put up with that.
Yeah.
And the guys who were unhealthy fed into it.
Yeah, they loved it because that was what they knew as love as well.
Yeah.
No, 100%. Like when I first started dating Leland, I was like, I had dated another kind of, and I don't want, Leland's not boring, but nice, just normal. And what I would have found boring too. And I did find it quite boring, but I was like, I'm really trying to fix my brain.
Yeah.
So I was like, I just got to keep up with this guy. And this guy also, there wasn't a big connection. There wasn't a sexual connection. I don't know. But it did help with rewiring my brain a little bit. Then I dated a DJ. That was a mess. He was a narcissist.
Yeah.
That was a bit of a falling off the wagon for a second. Okay. Then I got back on the wagon, met Leland, and I did struggle with it a bit in our first month of dating, because I was like, again, I was like, you don't want to be possessive or jealous, you don't want to throw something.
Yeah.
And yeah, I had to like settle into it.
It's a way of like, you equate jealousy sometimes with love, mm-hmm. or possessiveness with love, because that's what you were kind of shown, and like you grew up thinking that, like, oh, if you don't want me to talk to anybody else, that means you don't care if I talk to anybody else, which means that you don't love me. And
100%.
There's a lot of things that like go on there. And that's like one of those things where it's why therapy is so important for everybody, because everyone is susceptible to that. That's not a mental illness. That's just like trauma from childhood.
I completely agree with you. Like, I think now, like how my mother was going through my phone as soon as I got a phone. So fucking block ya, you know, Nokia 3310. And what are you going through my phone? I'm texting like my friend being like, see you like later, spelled L-8-R, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and she was going through my phone. She was reading my diary from when I was 7. I had to make up my own language.
God.
And I never let close my bedroom door if I were even allowed to sleep in my bed. She'd force me to sleep in the bed with her. So, of course, and then people are like, you know, it's so funny. Like, I remember sometime someone being like, well, why didn't you pick partners like your dad? And I never could figure out until I went to therapy. But if I'm honest, my dad fucked off when I was 5. And I love him. And I don't feel like he's not perfect. It's really, I don't think he would have gotten custody. I don't know what the story is there. We're not going to delve into there so nobody gets hurt.
Yeah.
But maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But I mean, if he had stayed there, he probably would have, the stuff he would have went through. So I mean, putting 5 years in there and what I saw him go through, I totally understand him leaving. But I was with the other person.
Yeah.
So what I equate with love is what the other person did.
Yeah.
I was with her the majority of the time. I saw her relationships more. Going down and seeing my dad's with my stepmom was great, but it was still only 20% of the time.
Yeah.
And thankfully I have that now to model with my relationship with Leland, but I'm with you on that. For the most part, it's what you see. You could still, even if you go to a friend's and you see that's a healthy, that's not what you're...
Yeah, because it's not imprinted in you from when you're imprinted? Like 5 to 7. No. You're just like... You're just like, oh, I see that this exists. It ain't for me, but
yeah. This doesn't. You guys don't really love each other. Yeah.
What's it like being dull?
Yeah. No, and we're great. And I've met your fiance. And yes, he's amazing. And it's definitely, you just have to rewire your brain. Can I ask you, is bipolar genetic or can it be influential? Like
it
environmental?
Is kind of both. It's definitely genetic, but I think it's one of those that can be kind of triggered.
Yeah.
And also how you're raised can affect the severity of the bipolar, yeah, like in how it presents in adulthood. There was actually this crazy study that was like very illegal, and it was done in the 60s or 70s in the US. And this psychiatrist would take twins and triplets and put them up for adoption with different families. And he intentionally put them up for adoption with parents with very different parenting styles. And there were these triplets in the 80s that discovered each other by accident because they were all in the New York area. Yeah. And they just happened to go to college, Jesus, like together or whatever. And they had all of these similarities that were really bizarre, like their specific like brands of cigarettes and their favorite colors, and everything was really similar. But when they discovered that they all, like, they didn't know because this was the 80s and people weren't really getting diagnosed, but they did all suffer from some form of depression. And one of them killed themselves. Jeez. And the other two were wondering, like, okay, we feel this way sometimes, but what made us not do that? And that's when they looked into the adoption agency and they found out it was done on purpose. And the kid with severe depression was put with parents who were really like, I forget the word for the parenting style. It's not, I don't think it's I think it's authoritarian.
Yeah.
There's a tricky one. There's one that's good and one that's bad. I think authoritative is the good one. Anyway, this one is like one where you act like you are like a dictator and everyone has to do exactly what you say.
Jesus.
So he never got to like live in his emotions and figure out a healthy way for him to cope. Yeah. And he ended up having the more severe depression out of the three, even though genetically all three of them are the same.
Yeah.
So that was kind of, I mean, that's a really messed up way to find out about mental health, but it is a really fascinating like discovery that the severity of it can really be determined by how you're raised.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I was even just thinking there when you were saying that. I wonder as well when you go out into the world by yourself and if you lived in such like a chaotic environment, you know, you probably don't even notice that you have bipolar until you go out into the,
yes,
world. And then you're because everybody's similar in the household and then you're the different one.
Yeah.
And then so that can be like a hard sort of like, a way, that's probably why people don't realize until they're in adulthood, maybe.
Yeah. And then also another tricky thing is like a lot of illnesses don't even present until you're a teenager or you're a young adult.
Yeah.
So like bipolar, a lot of times you don't even develop it until you're a teen or in your 20s. Same with schizophrenia. A lot of times there are some childhood versions of it, but like most of the time it's in your 20s. So it is like one of those with those illnesses, it's a little different, but I would say with like depression and more behavioral problems, like, personality disorders and stuff.
Yeah.
Because personality disorders, that's another thing. They don't really know too much about personality disorders that much either. That needs to be researched more about like, is there a genetic factor to those? Because right now I feel like they think that it's more, that one's more environmental, but we just don't know.
Yeah. There definitely needs to 100% be more research. Because even like with borderline personality, what I read up about it was just like that your wires are a little mixed up in your brain.
Yeah. It's like, you're like, yes, it seems to me that it's like, you know how they say you have like these different connections that your brain grows because it's like different paths you take. Kind of like, oh, I always take 14th Street, yeah, to get to the subway. You know, that type of thing. Like your brain follows that same pattern throughout your thought processes. And so like those personality disorders right now, they're saying like, oh, that's how your brain starts to develop those ways of thinking. But, you know, who knows if that your brain developed it because it was like genetically predisposed to do that or if it's because you grew up with a mother who showed that behavior or something
Also as well, how do they fix that? You know, they need to figure out how do we close 14th Street? How do we decide to go down 8th Avenue instead?
Exactly.
I think we should... Oh, we went on for really long. I'm so sorry I took up so much of your time.
Oh, that's okay.
You were amazing. Let's wrap this up with... Because when I asked you earlier...
I love these questions. I feel like I'm... I hope that I'm making sense too, because sometimes I ramble. I'm just like...
No, you're amazing. This is like really making sense.
Okay, good.
This article that I looked up was like psychiatry, patients, families, stigma and discrimination, because they say there's a lot of discrimination and stigma. Yeah. And so... And that you can do it to yourself, and then it can be done to you. And that's another thing, is they said in this with like mental health, a lot of time people will do it to themselves as well, which is like really hard because...
Oh, yeah. And then especially if you're in a depressive state, you can really like discriminate against yourself and blame yourself. And that's another thing, is like you really have to learn how to have grace with yourself and allow yourself to, you know, just trust that this isn't your fault.
Yeah, just really be nice to yourself. I thought it said that the things, because there were had a what not to say versus what to say, but I wonder if I read that in a different article. But yeah, so talk
openly,
educate yourself, be conscious of language. I wonder if there's the part of the language that was the one I wanted to.
Oh, we did talk about like word triggers a bit.
Yeah, because there was a, like, it was, I can't find it, but it had like a what not to say versus what to say. And the what not to say were like nearly traditional Irish sayings. And I was like, fuck.
May the road rise to meet you.
Yeah, you know, like real like shit we say to each other all the time. I can't find it here. If I find it, I'll bring it up like in the Patreon another time. But I will also with this episode link like American and Irish mental health, because I think a lot of I remember with my stuff with my mother, and then we went on a school trip just because we did transition year. I would have never known this, to a house, and I PETA house, and it was all about like talking about like kids who cut themselves, and if you want to come here and it's free therapy. I never went. It's in Lucan, and I don't know if it still exists because this would have been 15 years ago.
Right.
But I remember being like, oh, that's good to know about that. I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
So I'll put a link to every, I'll find places, because I think in Ireland we're very much like, because even with STIs and STDs, we just don't go get checked because you're like, where would I go get that done? And it's like, there's actual clinics that are free. Just go to Dublin, make the trip. It's a fucking hour wherever you live. Like, it can't be that far.
Yeah.
Okay. So where can people follow you?
So I use the same handle for everything. So I do at Ria Wojo, which is RIAWOJO.
Okay, so follow Maria on everything, and you're going to change your Laura Dern account.
Yeah, so I have a Laura Dern account, which I'm going to adjust to at Ria Wojo probably in the next few months.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. So
keep up.
Keep up. Yeah, exactly. Maria's engaged.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.